I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the power of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And
Angels of love!
Welcome to the Skippy and Fanty Show. Today, we have an uncanny podcast starring three members of the Uncanny Magazine. Please introduce yourselves. We start with Michael and Lynn.
Okay. I'm Lynn M. Thomas. I'm the co-editor-in-chief and co-publisher of Uncanny Magazine.
And I am Michael Damian Thomas, and I am also the co-publisher and co-editor-in-chief of Uncanny Magazine.
And I'm Mitchie Trotta. I'm the managing editor of Uncanny Magazine.
Well, thank you, the three of you, for coming back on the podcast. We had you back on back way at the beginning of before the launch of Uncanny a couple of years back. And now we are in time for another Kickstarter to start the third season of Uncanny.
Yes.
Or I should say the third year of Uncanny. Why am I thinking seasons? I don't know.
I don't know, but I think I almost prefer it.
Yeah, it kind of feels like one. It does kind of feel like a TV season.
I think we will start using that now. Calling it, season three of Uncanny.
Season three of Uncanny. So for those listeners who haven't listened to the previous episodes, why don't you reintroduce Uncanny to our listening audience?
So what we did is, over the past couple of years, we have been producing a magazine that is all about science fiction and fantasy that makes you feel. That's our basic remit.
We are an online magazine. We are a bi-monthly magazine that publishes ebooks every 2 months. That ebook is split into monthly content that comes out, strangely enough, every month on the first Tuesday of the month. It is a mixture of original science fiction fantasy stories, reprint science fiction fantasy stories, poetry, and thoughtful essays.
And interviews,
all of which are to, make you feel. Plus a podcast where one story is read and along with one poem and another interview.
And the interview that's on the podcast is exclusive to the podcast. And you get to hear Michael and I attempting to do what sounds like, we think, amusing banter on the podcast as we introduce things.
So we have been around, we are in the middle of, we have 11 issues out. So 22 months of content, 21 months have been released. Month 22 comes out, on the first Tuesday of August.
Yep.
And things have gone pretty well. No complaints. People seem to love Uncanny. We are currently up for the best Hugo in the semi-prosing category.
And we're also, listed as, finalists for a World Fantasy Award for, best non-professional. Work. So, we pay our writers professional rates, but we are considered a semi-prozine, for long list of neepery reasons. So that's what we do.
I will also add, we have amazing cover art for each of the issues. I'm pretty much going to end up dedicating a whole wall in our apartment just for printing out, or just for getting posters of each of the covers because they're absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
And, oh my.
And our mascot is a space unicorn. So people who are our readers and contributors and Kickstarter backers and Patreon patrons and subscribers, we refer to them as space unicorns and members of the Space Unicorn Ranger Corps.
And our remit as members of the Space Unicorn Ranger Corps is to go out and make more awesome in the world. That's what we do.
So I think that covers most things.
Yeah.
We're done. Yeah, that's everything.
And thank you.
That's all done. And the podcast is over. You're not getting away that easily because I have questions. So in the last few years, there have been trials and tribulations in science fiction award land, but Uncanny has managed to, as you had mentioned in your sum up, to get some award nominations. So tell me about how that feels and how how that feeds into the mission of what you're doing, and what's it like to have your work so well recognized, especially in these uncertain science fiction war times.
In these uncertain times, for us, it's about our finding that community of readers and connecting them with these amazing works of art that are just filled with awesome and kindness and beauty and interesting things. And awards are one of those things where you're just deeply, it really does. I mean, it's all the cliches. You're just deeply honored to be recognized for that. And to some degree, I mean, this has been unexpected, very unexpected for us. Or, for our year one, I mean, I just counted it up, and at this stage, there are 14 different awards connected to year one's material. And that is just so amazing, because even with there being the stuff with a specific award and slating, that it's a lot of other different awards too that have juries and other things. And even with that award that has the slating with the Hugos, we weren't on a slate. You know, we are on there this year because so many people seem to love Uncanny, and that just, it means all. I mean, that, because what that to us indicates is that it's connecting with readers, and readers are excited. And that's what we're here for. That's what we wanted.
It's humbling, really.
Yeah.
I mean, the level of recognition that we've gotten in our first 2 years overall of producing the magazine is just, it's humbling.
I'd say it's also exciting. It's really, I keep saying that I've been a fan for most of my life, but I really haven't been a part of fandom, or I haven't really felt like I've been a part of fandom up until really becoming part of Uncanny was a huge part of making me feel like I actually belong in fandom, in science fiction and fantasy. And it's great when I'm able to show people what we're doing in the magazine, and they can always find something to connect with. There's always going to be some kind of story that, if your tastes in science fiction and fantasy are very varied, you're going to find something that excites you, that you're happy to share with other people. And it's been such a wonderful ride to see how many people are connecting with the things that we're publishing, because there are so many different ideas and perspectives on what science fiction fantasy looks like, and to have that recognized is inspiring.
Excellent. I want to follow up on that, Mishi, if I might. There is the D word that gets thrown around science fiction lately, and that also goes around with the whole award thing. And that what Uncanny is for me as a proud reader and backer of it is its strength and its diversity. And how do you keep that up? How do you avoid falling into the traps of the same old, same old, the same old authors, the same ruts, the same taste without broadening it out into that wide range for everyone that you're seeking to do and have done in the present?
I think the thing about Uncanny is that, if we're going to use the D word, diversity is the default with Uncanny. We're starting from a baseline of there are a huge number of perspectives and ideas and creativity within science fiction and fantasy, and we should be seeking that out. That is what informs what gets published. It's not looking at something as like, oh, well, we're missing this story, or we're missing this voice. It's the idea that we just assume from the baseline that not only are the people writing science and fiction and fantasy are diverse, our audience is diverse. Mm-hmm. And the work that we choose reflects all of that.
Linda Michael, thoughts?
That pretty much nailed it in one. I mean, basically, our default is that the world is diverse, and so our magazine should also be. And our other default is that we belong here, and so do you. I mean, this is, we don't think of diversity in terms of things like quotas. We think about it in terms of inclusiveness. It's mm-hmm. about making sure that everybody feels welcome at our party. And that means that, we're doing things like, trying to stay current in the field and making sure that we're looking outside of our default networks when we're looking for new voices to write essays, or we're looking for new stories. We are making sure that we are aware of the choices that we make, and that we are just including as many people as we can, because that's how the world is built. And so our magazine is built that way, too.
Yeah, I think that, you know, looking around, I mean, many of the greatest things being, I mean, this is just an amazing time for science fiction writing. And so much of it is being done from people, by people from various backgrounds. And it's exciting to find these works and to let people, you know, and to go to these exciting creators and go, hey, I love your voice. This is an, I love the way your voice is telling the story. You know, please tell a story for us, you know, and then, you know, coming out to the, you know, all in all the different marginalizations that come into play and sometimes multiple for these creators. And this is an exciting time with exciting voices. And I love that we can go out and find these things and these pieces that are so beautiful and wonderful and do things in a slightly different way because everyone is speaking from their point of view. And then share that with our readers. You know, and some readers, you know, look and go, and this is where the visibility matters. And they go, hey, I see myself in this story. I see myself in this essay or poem. And others who, because our space unicorns are amazing, are like, hey, this is great. You know, I, this is not my background, but wow, what a point of view. What a thing. I love this. This is a voice I hadn't thought of, or this voice is just exciting. And it's just so, this is not difficult. It's really not difficult to have this, to have so many different voices.
Yeah, I think the community aspect is really, it's part of how we keep things fresh and uncanny. I just had a friend this morning who I had actually sent one of the stories that we had by J.Y. Yang over for her to read, because she's from originally from Singapore, and it's really important to her to see other people sharing her background also being published. And she got all excited because she's like, not only is it, this is an amazing story, but it's written by somebody who shares her background, and it wasn't something that she expected to see, and it was, it made her so happy. Like, that's the kind of thing that I think really makes Uncanny special, is that you can find yourself somewhere in the stories, and in not just one story, but multiple stories.
And it's just about making a connection. I mean, that's what space unicorns do. We want to connect people to one another and build a community of people where the default is that, you know, the world is diverse and we are inclusive, and that's, and all of our stories are welcome here, and all of our stories are awesome. And isn't it great that, you know, you can connect with things that aren't like you, and you can connect with things that you identify with deeply, and both of those things are okay. And in fact, it's awesome.
We are all a speaks universe.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now I'm going to get to a little more of the business side of things. Some people might have think you were crazy in trying to start an online science fiction magazine, especially in an age where a lot of the attention of the field has, and a lot of the money, to be perfectly honest, has moved on towards novels. So how is it trying to, now that you're coming on a third year, how is it trying to run an online science fiction magazine? What is that like?
Well, I think this is one of those things where people have been lamenting the death of the science fiction short story magazine since the 1950s.
Maybe even earlier. The 1920s.
Certainly by the 30s, people were writing think pieces about the death of science fiction. But, you know, there's always this fear that, you know, nobody cares about short stories anymore, that this isn't viable. And yeah, I'm not going to say that it's easy. You know, and I don't think running a magazine is ever easy. You know, but we haven't had that much trouble. I mean, we found, you know, for the most part, as you can see from our Kickstarters, we always fund fine. And, you know, each at this point, the Kickstarter, you know, what we've been doing, I mean, we find the readers and we find the revenue streams. And I think a lot of it's just, it is a lot of work, but it's there because the interest is there. So it's hustling, and it's understanding that you need to kind of build up multiple streams. So, you know, we have that Patreon stream. Because some people just prefer Patreon. That's the tip jar. That's how they can say, hey, keep this awesome podcast going. Some people, you know, they just want it sent directly to their Kindle as an ebook, and they love going to the Amazon subscriptions, or, you know, going through waitlists for a subscription. And for some people, it is about the Kickstarter. You know, they love the Kickstarter experience. So, and, you know, and at this stage, we also get a decent amount of revenue from
So,
you know,
it's about finding our readers where they are and making an option to help support us available to them where they already are.
Yes. And it's so far, I mean, I'm not, you know, once again, I'm not saying that we don't have to put a lot of work into it.
Because goodness knows, it's a lot of work.
But.
Oh, so much work.
But, and you know, that's, but if it's, it's there. The community is there. People want these stories. They want to read these stories. So I think this is an exciting time to run a magazine. I think it's an exciting time because online magazines can reach so many readers. Because when a story goes viral, it's no longer a matter of this is hitting our 25,000 subscribers. This is now, you know, a story can hit literally hundreds of thousands of people. You know, we had a story do that at Apex for, you know, and
for good and for ill.
There was stuff attached.
There's baggage there.
And we've had amazing responses and viral stories and people talking about it. I mean, obviously Folding Beijing right now is a story that's up for 3 awards, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, by Hao Zheng Feng and translated by Ken Liu, and Emad Motar's Pockets has been extremely popular. Many of our stories get out there and it's great. You know, so I think that, you know, if you're willing to put in the work and you love this, you deeply love this and you love the community and you love the writers and the art and the writing, it's a thing that can be done. You just, it has to be your passion though.
It really does have to be your passion. I mean, that I think is the biggest part of this, is that it's, we have a massive, you know, we have a fantastic team of staffers behind us, and everybody gets paid a little bit, but we're really not getting paid based on the amount of work that we're all doing, in all bluntness. The writers get paid mm-hmm. at professional rates. Our staff do not quite.
But they all get paid.
We value everyone's work, and we try to find other ways to make our staff feel valued when money is not the option on the table at the moment. But the thing is that what is most important for us is individual readers, because there is nothing like the experience of a reader giving feedback that basically amounts to this thing, you made this thing, and my heart, I love this thing. And that's what we do it for. And, you know, that's something that I learned to really appreciate back in the day when Chick Stick Time Lords was happening. When I worked on that, that was the reaction we were getting. And and my goal, because that's how I experience fanishness, is to help recreate that for as many people as possible, so that everyone can have a thing that they can hold on to and love, you know, as unconditionally as possible, as a thing that makes their heart happy. That's what I want. That's why I do this.
And, you know, this is...
I think that's why all of us do that.
You know, and to final off, you know, we didn't just kind of wander into this. We had, all of us had backgrounds where, you know, obviously, you know, we'd been working at Apex Magazine for quite some time, and we had, you know, done the books and things, you know, so.
And I have literature degrees.
Literature degree. You know, this was not a business we started, you know, without, we had a strong business plan going in where we knew what we wanted to do, how we could do it, how we could make this happen. And, mm-hmm. you know, watching the market trends, watching how things have changed in the last, because, you know, starting an online magazine 10 years ago is very different than starting one right now. There's, you know, things have really shifted. And so we try to follow the trends. We try to find new opportunities and things to do, you know, and constantly, you know, having to make adjustments as we go, which is what running a business is about.
That leads me on to a couple of possible follow-up questions. So I'm going to go to the one that just came to my mind as you say. So we are a couple of years into Uncanny. So I wanted, if you could talk about some of those shifts you've had to make or felt that we make the magazine better, make things better for yourself. How, I mean, running this business is not easy, as you said, and it's a labor of love, but how have you had to realign the gears as you've gone along, going from when you're running Apex to now running your own baby, as it were, and as the field itself has changed over the last couple of years so radically?
Oh, goodness.
Quick, put it to Mitchie.
Yeah, give me the business question.
I think a lot of it is just, you know, as you go, you figure out things that work and things that don't, and you have to have a willingness to adjust your systems is really what it comes down to. And, you know, there are things that we look at and we try to figure out, you know, there are services that we can take on that will help us achieve certain things. So, like, one of the things I'm looking at this year is business software to help me manage the finances. And uh-huh. we are also looking at submission systems. But
I mean, we have business.
Yeah, we have business stuff in place. It's just different software. So, you know, you look at you look at what's in place and you say, well, you know, is the way that we're doing this really the most efficient? And if it's not, you try to figure out what a more efficient way to do it would be. And sometimes the least efficient way is the way that is accessible to you, and that's what you do for a while until you find something better. But you just keep trying to adjust course. It's like moving a cruise ship. You do it incrementally.
Yeah, you know, there's always, you know, every issue there's a new lesson of maybe, you know, like,
we learn new things about ebook production every single issue.
Yeah. You know, like, well, actually, that's a good example. You know, going in, for instance, because we often will, you know, because ebooks are not always play the best with different fonts. Or
ebooks are not designed for design. They are designed for conveying plain text.
And Amazon and, yeah, wants a certain size file.
Yeah.
So sometimes it gets complicated as to, like, so when you have a story like John Chu's Restore the Heart into Love. Which has which our managing editor is still groaning about because of all the work she had to do. Yeah. You know, that was a thing where we had to learn pretty much from scratch. How do we take, you know, all these Chinese characters, which are not necessarily easily put into an ebook, and make them so that they show up in the EPUB and the Mobi and everyone can read it?
Yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot of I mean, if you see me Production Weekend on Twitter, you hear me, you know, threatening the ebooks visibly, because a lot of what we do is trying to find ways to work the technology that is ebooks, so that we can render the vision of our creators in a way that's appropriate to what they've given us. Because that's really the big challenge when you have creators who are providing us with things that include Chinese characters or include multiple fonts and multiple font styles and things like that. Ebooks, like the EPUB and Mobi formats, are not designed to do that. And if they do it, they don't do it well. And you kind of have to hack your way through it. I never in a million years thought that learning HTML when I was in library school in 1997 would be so useful. But hoo boy. Those skills come into play every 2 months when we go into production, because I end up doing a lot of sort of brute force HTML and XML code tweaking in an effort to render the stories appropriate to what the creators have given us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I can talk about a couple other things. Like, you know, when we started planning in 2014, Patreon was not a big deal yet. You know, it was still something that was coming. I don't even remember when Patreon started.
It was fairly new, and people were sort of looking at it going, I don't know if this is going to work.
You know, so, you know, that's something which wasn't part of our business plan that has been incorporated, and it is a revenue stream now. And, you know, at the Nebulas this year, we had some lovely meetings with Margot Atwell, who's in charge of the publishing parts of Kickstarter. And, you know, another thing with Kickstarter, you know, when Kickstarter formed, as you can tell from the name, it sounded like it was going to be a thing that starts your business and then you leave it. You know, but, you know, talking to Margot, you know, and seeing what's happening with some other things on Kickstarter, it's now turning into a thing because of how it community builds, that it can be used for ongoing projects in ways. And that's a very exciting thing. And Kickstarter themselves as a company are starting to make changes to how they do things in order to make that easier for creators to do some kind of ongoing funding models with them, like we're doing. So that's, you know, something where at the very beginning, we weren't sure how Kickstarter was going to work with us. And now we know this is an important community and they just love it. You know, there are people who just love Kickstarter and this is how they want to support a magazine.
Michi, thoughts?
I think that's really interesting looking at how things like Kickstarter and Patreon have evolved, because it's not just us evolving how we're approaching using things like Kickstarter and Patreon to help support the magazine. Mm-hmm. It's also those platforms are evolving in order to help projects like ours actually do better and to give us more tools that can help us succeed in our, you know, in our campaigns, because they're also paying attention to how these projects are doing and the type of communities that are springing up. So I think it's interesting that it's not just what people, you know, it's not just the people who are using these platforms that we're learning and we're constantly tweaking and figuring out what works for us. Some of these platforms are actually reaching out and doing the work to make their platforms better for us as well. So it's not like, you know, when I'm using something like Creative Suite to do the PDF versions of the magazine, that's sort of a one-way street with the software. Like, I have to wait for updates to come out, you know, for little tweaks here and there to be done. But with things like Kickstarter and Patreon, they're actively paying attention to the community and seeing how they can, what can they do to give us to make things work better, because it works better for them as well.
Interesting. I mean, when I first was introduced to Kickstarter, I thought of it as like the one-shot model. Okay, you pay the money and then that's it. But it does seem like in some ways it's becoming more hybridized with more of a Patreon sort of ongoing. We're going to come back every so often to continue our awesomeness. So yes. why don't we talk about the goals for your current Kickstarter for the new season of Uncanny.
Yeah. Well, really quick though, with just off that one thought of yours, Paul, I mean,
sure.
It feels like, you know, in talking to people who back a lot of Kickstarters, I think one of the things that Kickstarter gives more than anything else is not just a sense of community, but a sense of, you know, being a stakeholder in what's happening.
Yeah. Shareholders, mm-hmm. really.
Yes, absolutely.
You are a shareholder. You're a stakeholder. You are one. It's like you are part of the community that, and you feel this. I mean, it's like when you go to the store and buy a thing of ketchup, you don't feel like you are a part owner of, you know, of the ketchup company. But I, no, usually not. I don't know. Maybe you do.
If you make your own, that's different. But if you're just buying it at the store.
But it is like when you back a project on Kickstarter, there's a definite feeling of, hey, this thing exists because of me. I'm one of X number of people who made this dream happen, who brought this amazing thing into the world that maybe couldn't have come through in a different way. And because of that, the Kickstarter backers are so passionate about the projects. And that is, you know, I think it's easier to get that kind of passion than, say, you know, once again, selling an ebook at a random ebook store, which is also wonderful. And those people are great. Thank you for buying it. But the passion that comes with Kickstarter is a unique, I think, thing.
Well, our backers become essentially co-creators with us to a certain extent. Yeah. They are stakeholders in this thing. And one of the things that Kickstarter in particular as a platform allows us to do is, it allows us to pay our writers on acceptance. I mean, it because the money is upfront, because you have a group of people saying, yes, we want you to keep doing this thing for another year because we think this thing is awesome. That allows us, you know, to have a pool of money with which to pay the people that help us to do the thing. And on top of that, what you get is it allows us to have the model that we do of we put all of our content for free on the web. We hold half of each issue back so that it's released monthly and our ebook subscribers get the entire issue. But what it means is that Kickstarter community members and our subscribers and our patrons are all aware that they're helping to subsidize free fiction for people who aren't in a position to support us financially.
But it also gives them the opportunity to know, like, if I love this thing, if I love this story, oh, wow, I can share it with all my friends.
Yep.
I can send that link around. And I made this thing happen along with these amazing creators, which brings us to, drumroll, the year 3 Kickstarter and what we were up to actually answer your question.
That was quite a smooth transition.
So we actually answered the question.
Well done. Well done.
Professionals.
So at this stage, as we're recording this, we're about 75% funded. And what that will do is bring us to our original goals, which is actually, because we keep hitting our stretch goals in the previous ones, would be slightly less fiction than what we are publishing right now. And slightly fewer essays. But we are about to hit that after 1 week, 75%. Hopefully we will be fully funded in a week. And then we will present, at the very least, we are going to present a whole bunch of amazing solicited contributors. Go, Lynn!
In alphabetical order, because that's the easiest way to read the list, we have solicited stories from the following contributors. Paul Cornell, John Chu, Maria Devana Headley, Nalo Hopkinson, N.K. Jemison, Mary Robinette Kowal, Shauna McGuire, Sam J. Miller, Sarah Pinsker, Delia Sherman, Ursula Vernon, Catherine Valenti, Alyssa Wong, and Isabel Yap.
So,
wow. Yeah.
And, you know, so far, I mean, many things can happen on the way to them getting published, but, you know, we've been pretty close to having everybody published, if not in that year they asked that we solicited them for, then soon after.
Yeah.
So, and that is I think that's a pretty amazing group of authors myself.
Yeah, I think so.
For nonfiction, we have Sophie Aldred, who many of you may know, who played Ace on the original, and the classic series Doctor Who.
With I cannot explain how excited I am that Sophie's writing for us.
Oh, very, so very excited.
Javier Griot-Marxwash, who is working on the Xena reboot as we speak, and was showrunner of The Middleman, one of my favorite shows. Sarah Kuhn, Mark Oshiro, David J. Schwartz, and Cecilia Tan. All of them will be writing amazing, thoughtful, cool nonfiction next year.
And of course, we can't forget our poets and our artists. We have asked the following poets to contribute poetry this year. Lisa M. Bradley, Roshani Chokshi, Theodora Goss, Nin Harris, Shweta Takrar, and Joe Walton. And we have commitments for art from Galen Dara, Julie Dillon, and Grace P. Fong, who's going to very specifically give us new ebook headaches by creating specific art for the story that Alyssa Wong is writing. So there's going to be a comic that goes with Alyssa's story. And we're going to try to figure out, it may take some time, but we're going to get there. We will figure out how to publish these things together so that you get a comprehensive two-pronged story between Alyssa's story and the comic. Alyssa and Grace are working together, and we're going to work with them to make sure that we can put it out.
I don't think it's actually a comic. I think it's just art.
I thought
it was telling the story. I think it's just sequential art.
Sequential art that follows the story that Alyssa is telling us. So that's something new for us. We haven't attempted to do that before.
So that is just if we achieve the norm. So if we get our stretch goal, the first stretch goal, because that's at 18,700. If we reach that, this is what you, hopefully
that's what you get.
That's what we're bringing you.
Plus about 12 stories, roughly speaking, from our open submissions process. So we solicit. So with the baseline funding, what that gets you is all of the solicited authors and just as many non-solicited authors through our open submissions process.
Now,
how many submissions are you getting these days?
When we're open, it's about 1,000 submissions
so
a month.
Many.
1,000 to 1,500. It really depends on the month.
Yeah.
Yikes.
So it is a lot. So as you can tell, not a lot of slots for that many people. So it can be,
you got to bring your A game.
It's exciting. So
A plus game.
Yeah.
Yes. So our stretch goals this year, if 21,000 happens, which hopefully it will, it'll be another original cover by Galen Dara. And if you've seen her issue 1 and her issue 10 covers, you can see why we're excited about that. And the Grace Fong illustrations, which so I'm hopeful they will happen. 22,000, that means we can maintain having 4 essays per issue.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't get that, then we have to go down to 2 essays. 26,000 brings back the 4,000 additional words of fiction per issue.
So that's basically one additional story. And that would be through the open submissions process.
And 30,000 brings back the other 4,000. So that would bring us to, roughly speaking, about 24 stories per year through open submissions, opening it up to all those voices. At 30,000, the stretch.
At 31,000.
31,000. And here is the exciting new stretch goal for this year. as many people know, one of the things going on online right now in our community is kind of we've lost a lot of major blogs. You know, we've lost SF Signal. We've lost The Toast. Don't know what's going to happen after the Gawker lawsuit with IO9. Hopefully nothing, but it's times. But so one of the things we want to do is we have our blog and our blog is nice and we would like to expand our blog and have more content and pay people at least a little bit for their work. So that's what we're hoping to do. If we hit 31,000, we will keep Liz Argall's Things Without Arms and Things Without Legs reaction comic, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
We are adding a column starring Emel Motar and Max Gladstone called Max and Emel Go to the Movies, where they where they will sit down and they will see a new big science fiction film or a classic science fiction film and be in dialogue about said film. So that's pretty exciting. Mitchie has got a whole bunch of column ideas for herself, which I'll let her talk about. Because I think Mitchie's pitched like seven different concepts to me.
Yes. And they're all like, I'm eventually going to have to whittle them down. I mean, I'm definitely planning on actually getting a tattoo sleeve next year or next 2 years, depending on when I can actually save up the money for it, of the cover, Galen Dara's cover from issue 10. There's the space unicorn tattoo on the woman's arm. I want that tattoo. So we could definitely do something like Mitchie makes bad life decisions.
And this would just
be one of them.
And I am personally planning on doing my first column, which will basically be my first Doctor Who column, which will incorporate me going into my collection room, picking up a thing from my collection room, and then riffing on that collectible and personal history, show history, whatever comes to mind because of that thing I am holding in my hand.
And listeners, Michael has a giant collection of
documents. Yeah, it's pretty extensive.
It's not shabby.
It made the Chicago Tribune. Yeah.
It's a decent collection. There are bigger. But it is a thing, and it would be my first Doctor Who column. That'd be exciting, because I haven't done a lot of Doctor Who stuff since I co-edited the book Queer Stick Time Lords. So it'd be nice to do some Doctor Who writing.
What? And hopefully the uncanny Kickstarter will reach those vaunted heights, and we will get the full unbridled power of this uncanny Kickstarter magazine space station. Oh, wait. I'm mixing my metaphors. I went to Star Wars. My apologies.
It's okay.
It's okay. That's no moon.
That is no moon.
It's our magazine.
So it's our magazine.
So I want to thank...
Go ahead. We also have what the last stretch goal that we have, too, is 33,000.
Oh, what's that?
That will give us an original cover by Kirby Fagan.
And Kirby is a great emerging artist, and we're going to be putting up a Kirby cover, actually, in issue 12, which I think people will love. And Kirby's been doing work for Marvel Comics, so this should be... It's going to be beautiful. And every time we do a new original cover, I get excited.
Yeah, original cover art is so much fun. It's one of the most fun things about... I mean, we love our reprint covers, and they're fun to hunt for, but there's nothing more fun than being able to go to an artist and say, just do something. If you want to read the stories that your cover's going to be on, we can maybe get you some of them, but do something cool.
We give a little bit more direction than that.
That's where we begin, though.
Yes.
And the thing is, when we do that, we end up with amazing cover art.
Well, I think that's true with everything we do. I mean, because what we ask people for is do something you've always wanted to do and take risks.
Yeah.
Be creative, take risks, bring your awesome. We want to support that.
Word. Right. I could spend you 20 more minutes talking about cover art and online magazines, but your time is precious, and some of us are in very heated situations with their apartments. So I'm going to bring our conversation close. So I want to thank the three of you so much for coming on. And if you have any final words or thoughts about the Kickstarter, about Uncanny, that you want to share with our listeners, now is your time. Go, Mitchie.
Mitchie first. Mitchie, you go.
Oh, fine. Put all the pressure on me then. I can't say how wonderful it's been being part of Uncanny for the last couple of years, because it's just reignited how much I love science fiction and fantasy, and it's opened me up to meeting so many amazing people and creators in the community who I have frankly never would have met if I had not become part of Uncanny. It's allowed me to be... to take part in something that I love deeply, passionately, and I'm able to use my professional skills as well as personal passion to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I get to now say that I'm actually the first Filipina Hugo finalist ever, which would not have happened if Lynn and Michael hadn't reached out to tap me, and without all of the support that people have poured into Uncanny. So you all make this possible. You've made a huge dream of mine happen, and you're making dreams happen for so many people and making them believe that it's possible to become part of an amazing community. So keep Uncanny going. There are more people out there who they can become part of this as well and experience this kind of amazingness.
Thank you. Lynn and Michael?
I don't even know how to follow that other than saying, you know, we are absolutely loving throwing this party, and we want you to be part of it. Come and play with us. Let's have some fun and do some awesome and put some good and kind and fun stuff out in the world.
Shine on, space unicorns.
Nay! That's how we close every Uncanny podcast. I kid you not.
And on that note, listeners, end scene.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.